today on 101.9 WDET. I'm your host, Stephen Henderson, and I'm really glad you've joined us on this wonderful spring day. It's something of an understatement, really, to say that today's Republican Party is different than the GOP of even just a few years ago. The Republican Party was once the party of traditional conservatism in favor of things like minimal government regulation of industry or private lives. They liked a strong military. And of course, they loved low taxes. They're still for a lot of those things, but now you'd just as likely associate the GOP with a vast and pretty tyrannical social agenda. One that pushes back really hard against the social and cultural progress that has unfolded over the past few decades. I think it's fair to say the GOP is anti-civil rights and even doesn't much want to teach young people about the history of inequality in our nation. The GOP is against the full protection of rights for the LGBTQ community, an issue that has really grown and blossomed in the last decade or so. And this is an interesting change. The GOP is anti-immigration, and many of its elected leaders are just outright xenophobic when it comes to thinking about American pluralism. You don't have to go too far back in history to find Republican champions of immigration in our country. What it boils down to, really, is that this is a party that's about raw power, and not just in the political sense. It's also about power in the cultural and social sense. And it is protecting the powerful and their franchises, and that means the less powerful among us are sometimes victims or targets of their ideologies and their policies. Which brings us to the recent stories, some of them awful, harrowing stories, about the reemergence of child labor in this country. Yeah, child labor, something that went away, or at least we thought it went away, a really long time ago in America, but has been rearing its head again. There are bills in states all around the Midwest, Iowa, Ohio, Nebraska, Minnesota, to actually lower age restrictions for work and soften safety protocols in some workplaces. Now, some of these bills are pretty innocent, like ones that want to allow teens to work later into the summer. But there are others, like in Wisconsin, that would do things like allow 14-year-olds to serve alcohol in bars and restaurants. And there are some stories that are even more shocking. Recently, the New York Times and the Washington Post found exploited migrant children to be working illegally in some American workplaces. And the U.S. Labor Department actually found two 10-year-olds working at a McDonald's in Louisville, Kentucky, sometimes until 2 a.m. Now, there are a lot of theories as to why some analysts and many Republicans are suggesting that we loosen labor laws. Lots of them say that this is necessary to help businesses deal with the large worker shortage. And, of course, it's more profitable to employ young people, underage people, than it is adults. It's about profit in many ways. But is that all that this is about, or is something else going on? What's causing this push for Republicans across the country to suggest allowing younger workers into the workplace to do sometimes quite dangerous work? And how much would these bills in these legislatures in these many states really change the workplace in America to be a more dangerous place, a less forgiving place than it has been for a really long time. That's where we begin the conversation today, with this idea of the reemergence of child labor in America. We've got two guests with us to help us understand what's going on. Rachel Cohen is a senior policy reporter for Vox, and she has been writing about this Republican push to weaken our child labor laws. Rachel, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thank you so much. Good morning.
And also with us is Dennis Darnoy. He is a Republican political consultant here in Michigan. He tracks voter data and other issues. He joins us from time to time to talk about the things that are going on inside the Republican Party. Dennis, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Good morning. Good morning, Stephen. Thank you for having me.
So, Rachel, I'm going to start with you. Put all this into context for us. What kinds of labor laws are being loosened in which states, and how big a deal is this? I, in the open there, talked about it being a fundamental change, a fundamental shift away from years of policy in this country that said children shouldn't be working. Am I overstating what's happening?
I think it's important for listeners to understand that we do not actually have a great picture of the state of child labor in the U.S., which is a huge problem. So while we do have evidence that there have been increases in labor violations documented by the Department of Labor since 2015, since 2018, we also know that there are a lot more investigations that are not happening. And in fact, in 2002, the department found more children, identified doing working illegally than they did last year. So while there's been an increase in violations found, we don't have a great picture of what the real trend is. And that's for a couple of reasons. One reason is that, the American Community Survey, which is run by the Census, only asks about employment for workers 16 and up. So that already excludes a lot of the kind of Americans we're trying to learn about. And under federal labor law, work permits are not required. So some states require work permits, which is, I think we'll get into this later in the show, but that's one area that some of these new state laws are trying to repeal, because some states do require youth to register, with the state that they're working. But as states, not all states have them, and the states that are getting rid of them, that's taking away another paper trail that we have to kind of get a picture. So it's an issue, because there seems to be concerning evidence that this is a big problem, like the New York Times investigation finding all of these illegal migrant youth working. But it's coupled with the fact that we don't actually have a great picture of what the situation is. And that's adding a lot of confusion and chaos to these bills that are cropping up in states.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the bills that are being proposed in some states to loosen child labor laws. What do they look like? And are they bills that, in your estimation, would actually put children in danger?
So the bills that we're seeing really started to come up last year. The first two passed in New Hampshire and New Jersey in 2022. And this year we're seeing a bunch more come up in Midwestern Republican states, or by Republican legislatures in purple states. And I think one of the challenging aspects of understanding the story is, for a lot of people who are watching these laws, they, with I think legitimate reason, do not believe that some of the rules being proposed to roll back this year or last year is the last we're going to see. A lot of people think this is just the first step to a broader unraveling of these protections that we've had in place for a long time. So on some cases, and you got into this in your introduction, some individual rules might not seem so egregious. Certainly some families might not mind if their teenager works until 9 p.m. on a school night as opposed to 7 p.m. Some families will. Some families wouldn't. But there are these sort of other broader areas that are causing a lot more concern for people, like trying to expand the kinds of jobs young people can work in, including some that are definitely more dangerous. And I think a lot of labor experts and advocates worry that if we make it easier for young people to work longer hours in more types of jobs, we are sending a message that our already lax enforcement of these laws is going to be even more relaxed. And there's a lot of research about the impact of working, say, more than 20 hours a week if you're in school or college. Like, there is a level at which working on top of school becomes really difficult if you are working, you know, more than 20 hours a week. So those are the kinds of concerns people have. In addition to sort of physical safety, there's a concern about academic performance and what that might mean. And there's a concern that this is just sort of the opening salvo to a larger push to roll back even more protections, even if this year maybe people don't find all the individual provisions as egregious as others.
Yeah, yeah. Dennis Darnow, I want to bring you into the conversation here and have you talk about what is going on in the Republican Party that is inspiring this push to reshape labor law in this country. What is animating this discussion inside the Republican Party?
Well, as Ms. Cohen pointed out, and we've talked about, a lot of this has to do with individual preference and family preferences. And what you see, and this is more of a traditional conservative viewpoint, is pushing back against government overreach. And what we see in a lot of these bills, the underlying ideology behind it is to say that, you know, we would like to see parents determine what they would like to see, you know, happen with their children and give parents more rights than government. Having individuals work, you can, you know, look and see the benefits of just individual success from enjoying a paycheck, from taking pride in doing work, increasing, you know, a child's sense of independence. And when you look at some of the other issues going on, especially in teenagers' lives and young adults' lives, and a lot of the dangers of just sitting on a phone or online activity, the argument is there to be made that isn't it more productive to use your time by working and having a job and doing these things and again earning your own independence. And I think that's something that we've seen a lot through the GOP traditionally, that they are in favor of less government regulation and more individual choice. There is a value on independence and establishing a work ethic. As you pointed out, there is a transition point right now, an inflection point within the party, within the Republican Party. So there are going to be those moments when traditional conservative values cross paths with the more, you know, modern GOP. And it's, you know, I think unfortunate that at times the two are going to be just put under the one larger umbrella. But again, I think what you see is a lot of these ideas coming from traditional conservative policy and think tanks, and again, just moving, you know, back in favor of parental rights over government involvement.
I mean, that's an interesting way to frame it, right? That the issue of children in workplaces is fundamentally a parenting issue and not a workplace or industry issue. And I'm going to go back again to, you know, an earlier time in this country when there was a pretty big argument about the presence of children in workplaces. And there were lots of things that changed in the law and also in just kind of custom that eliminated child labor because I guess the best way to put it is that it was deemed that this is not a parenting issue, or that the parenting issues here are inferior to the regulatory concerns, mostly about safety, but also about the idea of exploitation. is this an effort to kind of relitigate that discussion or that argument and go back? I mean, you're right that in that context, it's a traditional conservative argument. At the same time, you could argue that the push inside the Republican Party to, quote, protect innocent life seems to be in conflict with the idea of sending children off to work. I guess I'm wondering what the end game is here. What is being rethought or negotiated here in this new push?
Sure. And I think in that regard, I mean, conservatives look at the market. And so when you talk about protections, I mean, certainly, you know, companies are not going to be putting minor children in situations that their insurance company would not provide liability coverage for. So you have a certain set of protections there. Schools still require parental permission for work study credit. So there is another layer there that would offer a protection. And not just in the area of child labor, but I think obviously the biggest one right now, the focus is education. What you do see, as you put it, a relitigation of really who should be determining the direction and future lives of children. And there's been, and across a lot of institutions, of course, but there's been sort of a lack of faith, a lack of trust in a lot of the institutions that generally in the past have shaped our children's lives, their destinies. And so what you see within the Republican Party is almost trying to reclaim control of who has the larger impact on children's lives. And again, I think there are those within the party who, you know, really do see, rather than becoming dependent on a state or a school, going out there, earning a paycheck, earning your work, and taking pride in that. And again, increasing a sense of independence. And it's independence driven from a family's viewpoint, from an individual's viewpoint, versus a government's viewpoint. And so there is a very, very strong, divide right now within the country in terms of what are the roles of public institutions in the lives of individuals, and especially right now in the lives of individual children.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about child labor in our country with Rachel Cohen of Vox and Dennis Darnoy, a Republican political consultant. We want to get going with you, the listeners, on the phones and on social. Give us a sense of what you make about these stories that we're seeing about children working alongside adults in American workplaces. What do you make of that? What age do you think is too young to work? What kinds of jobs do you think children shouldn't be allowed to do? And do you think the current structure of labor law in this country has it right, or that we can find more leeway, more opportunity for young people to work by tweaking it a little? As always, the number here on the phones is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can include you in the show that way. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today. Talking about child labor in America and a push from some Republicans to reframe the idea of child labor in America. Maybe not make it such a hands-off issue. Maybe expand the opportunities for young people to be working in our country. Our guest is Rachel Cohen. She is a senior policy reporter for Vox. She has been writing about the Republican push to weaken some child labor laws. We've also got Dennis Darnoy with us. He's a Republican political consultant here in Southeast Michigan. He studies a lot of voter data, but also joins us from time to time to talk about kind of the internal struggles and tensions in the Republican Party. We want to hear from you as well. Colin, tell us what you make of this push to think differently about child labor, make it easier for children to actually work. You can join us on the phone. 313-577-1019 is the number, or you can go to Twitter and hashtag Detroit Today, and we can work you into the conversation. Before we get to our listeners, Rachel, I want to come back to you. Dennis was talking before the break about this idea of empowering parents more, and that that is one of the driving forces behind this, giving parents more agency over what is appropriate for their children and what is not. Of course, that bumps up against the absolute inspiration for child labor laws, which is to protect vulnerable people from exploitation. So I do want to have you talk a little about the children who would be most vulnerable under some of the bills that are proposed in some of the states. We have seen stories, for instance, of migrant children being discovered in workplaces. I would think that's a category that you'd be particularly worried about. But talk about others who would be less protected than they are now if some of these bills became law.
Yeah, thank you for the question. And, you know, I think it is important to say that when the U.S. government started requiring compulsory schooling, lots of parents didn't like that either. They thought it's their right to get to keep their kids home from school to help with raise money for their family and work on their farms or work, you know, in their jobs and small businesses. And so there's been this really long-standing push and pull throughout American history over like what rights do parents have over their children. And so part of child labor rules and requirements for schools are to protect children, and part of them are also because the state says, you know, we think it's important for our country to prioritize education for young people. And so there's this battle that has just never really been fully resolved. Mm-hmm. And you definitely have some parents today thinking some of the rules restricting their kids or teenagers are paternalistic or not needed or arbitrary. And that's what we're fighting over. But I think it's also the case, and this is what your question gets at, that there are, you know, not all parents have put their kids in safe conditions, have maybe the same priorities for education as others do. And we are trying to figure out what's the balance between giving kids their all the tools and strengths and skills that they need to succeed and how much. And we see these fights with all sorts of things, whether it's vaccines or other kinds of healthcare. And, you know, especially with migrant youth and vulnerable youth that are more likely to be exploited, some of these employers are paying cash to the parents themselves. And so there is a risk and concern about just giving all authority back to parents, because not all parents are going to put their kids and teenagers in the safest positions, or they might have more of an interest in saying, you know, we need money, you can't go to school anymore, or I don't care if your schoolwork suffers, you need to be working 6 hours a day on a Thursday afternoon after school. And so those are some of the real challenges. But it is, as you were discussing before, this difficulty, because while child labor rings really, I think, poorly and, you know, raises a lot of alarm, people feel pretty positively about the idea about teamwork, and youth employment is often a positive policy goal that even liberals push for. And so there's a lot of language that we use in this conversation, and how people talk about it can be confusing. And we know from polling that while parents don't necessarily know the details of their state child labor laws, a lot of Americans and parents feel generally positive about the idea about teen jobs. Like they think it instills good work habits and financial skills and sense of responsibility and independence. And so these laws are coming up against that sort of political context, which can be challenging for the people who are trying to raise awareness about the risks of these laws, because a lot of parents think, well, what's so bad about a teen job? And these laws are that's a bit of a distraction, I think, from some of the more concerning things that advocates are trying to at least put on the table and have a discussion about.
Sure, sure. Again, 313-577-1019 is the number here on the phones, and you can go to social, to Twitter, hashtag us, and we can include you in the show that way. Big Neo on Twitter says Republicans are pushing this because they want the have-nots to believe that they have to work long, hard hours to survive, while their children are being taught that education is what will allow them to thrive in this world. The double standard, he says, is real. Boomy on Twitter says pushing what has been known as illegal labor to children so they can have their holier-than-thou narrative and also simultaneously keep costs low has always been the motive. Legally, kids don't have to be paid the state minimum wage here in Michigan. $7.25 is their price tag. Let's go to the phones here and start today with Peter in Detroit. Peter, welcome to the show.
Good morning, Stephen.
Hey.
Stephen, this is just about the most absurd idea among a litany of absurd ideas from the Republican Party. Maya Angelou said, when someone tells you who they are, you should believe them the first time. And saying for a very long time, the party is pro-business. This is the reason in the 19th century and in the 19th, the jobs is because they're cheaper. And that's what this is about. It's about getting cheaper labor for businesses. They claim to be pro-family, but wouldn't you want to pay parents more so the kids could go to school? But how about your pro-family, your parents' rightsness when trans kids aren't allowed to, their parents aren't allowed to help them make a decision? Oh, we're going to protect the kids from that, but you're going to let them work in a factory? That is absurd. Mm. And it's offensive to come to everybody else and say, oh, we're with this, protect families. That is just.
So, Peter, your phone was breaking up just a little there, but I got, I think, most of what you're saying. I certainly get the gist of what you're saying. I think maybe the most interesting point you're making, though, is the inconsistency of this position saying, hey, let's let parents decide on their own what happens with their children. Let's let parents be in charge of their children's lives. But it seems that it's really only in this context of work that in many other cases, for instance, gender and gender identity, Republicans are saying they don't want parents to make their own decisions and they don't want families to decide. And so that suggests that maybe this is just about money, that because here you're talking about higher profits for businesses if they are employing children, if you're talking about, you know, other advantages to employers from employing children, that it makes sense. So, Dennis, how would you respond to that?
Well, what I would say is, you know, I do agree with Ms. Cohen when she was talking about all authority and, you know, vesting all authority in parents, not necessarily the best idea. And I would agree with that. And I think where conservatives look at this issue and they say not all authority. And certainly that's why we have the Fair Labor Standards Act. So if you really want to, you know, make sure that there are protections, you know, increase you know, penalties and fines at the federal level, you know, strengthen existing laws and actually enforcing it. If this is a priority for the federal government, then the budget should reflect that. I think that the argument again goes back to having individual states creating their own laws, and if the voters of those states support the elected officials passing these laws, then that's, you know, that is that state's rights. I mean, we have talked about predominantly Midwest states, but at the beginning we also mentioned that it's New Hampshire, New Jersey that are looking at some of these laws. So those are certainly not Republican strongholds. So when we, you know, there is a balance that can be struck between giving parents rights over the decisions that they want to make as it pertains to their own child working, while also saying there is a role to be played not only in the market, but also at a limited federal level And if this is a priority of the federal government, then they should enforce the existing laws. They should work to strengthen the laws where there is, you know, lax oversight. And again, you're always going to hear the issue about budgets, then increase the penalties and the fines for violating these things. And that way you're generating revenue for the department as well.
But what about the question about consistency across issues, right? If we're for more parental input and control over their children's lives, why isn't that in true in every sense? And why wouldn't that be true, for instance, in the narrative around, changing views about and approaches to gender identity? Republicans are dead set against that and in many cases want to interfere with parents and their children and in families to prevent that from happening. Why isn't that the same in their eyes as the choice to have your child work or not?
Well, I would say it's difficult to comment on individual level decisions when it comes to issues such as that. What I would say is what we see is the argument being more against that, those issues being discussed and taught in school and parental rights being stripped away in terms of allowing teachers to not even inform parents as to conversations and decisions being made by children of that age, whether or not obviously those conversations are taking place within a individual family structure. That's not something I can comment on, but I would say that where this argument receives the most attention, the most media coverage, the most online coverage is in those areas where it seems to be that is being dictated to the parents that they must accept this, this direction or, this kind of, focus rather than that being a decision made within the home. So again, we're going back to that a formal government structure making decisions or taking actions that impact the parents' ability to weigh in on that. And yes, there are going to be situations where individual families, that discussion is not going to be one that is, conducted easily or necessarily balanced. But again, I think there are families and the parental rights argument is still a conversation to be had within the confines of the home, not within the school walls.
Yeah. Again, Peter, really appreciate the call and the comments. Let's go next to Chris in Detroit. Chris, welcome to the show.
Hello, Stephen, and hello, Detroit, and Metropolitan and wherever else. What I'm saying is basically parents and corporations are looking at children and kids as slaves for economic reasons. And the thing is to not do so, we should establish trusts for households, firms, and institutions to take away the economic factor, especially when automation is taken and AI is trying to take off and things. We need to step away from the pedophobia and allow people to actually become themselves in a way that is loving and not marginalizing.
So Chris, I just want to make sure I'm hearing you right. You're saying that we should do better by families financially to prevent this from even being a question. Is that right?
Do better by our corporate entities as well. Mm. Like the Tin Man, we have to give them a heart. You know what I'm saying? The only way they will have that is trust.
Yeah.
Look at how the businesses that have trust established for them, how they operate. Look at how the families that have trust established for them, how they operate.
Yeah.
Institutions, for whatever reason, don't have trust established for them. You know what I'm saying? And they need this so that they aren't parasitic and that corporations aren't parasitic and that families aren't parasitic upon each other.
Yeah. Chris, I really appreciate the call and that that perspective. Rachel, I do want to talk about the current context for businesses and the way it is driving this, right? The worker shortage that exists, the difficulty that that businesses still have rebounding from the pandemic and the disruption there. Those are background players, I think, in this conversation, and maybe the reason that people are paying maybe closer and more apt attention to it right now.
Absolutely. So there is this more conservative ideological motivation that we've been talking about parents' rights, but absolutely the hiring shortage, the scramble and competition for workers since coming out of the pandemic is really a huge factor behind some of these bills, because that's gotten a lot of the business groups to be lobbying lawmakers and saying, you know, this is a clear, easy way to help us. Don't you want to help struggling businesses? Don't you want to support youth employment? And so a lot of lawmakers are talking about the bills in all of those sorts of terms, all of those aspects about helping kids, helping businesses, an economic fix. And we know that there are groups like the National Independent Small Business Groups have been pushing it, and big and small businesses have really been seeing this as a way to help them in what has been a tough time.
Yeah. Okay. Rachel Cohen and Dennis Darnoy, it was great to have both of you here to talk about this issue. Thanks so much for joining us here on Detroit Today.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Okay, we're going to take another quick break, and when we come back, we're going to stay on the topic of politics, but we're going to switch to talking about care work. We're going to talk with an activist and with Congresswoman Rashida Tlaib about what they're trying to do to pass legislation that better supports care workers. Stay with us. We'll be right back with more Detroit Today.